on, y'all. Wassalamu alaikum and welcome to Muslim Film Club, a podcast where two American Muslim filmmakers talk about movies. I am Jawad Khan.
I'm Danish Sheikh.
And on this episode, we talk about one of our favorite movies of all time, The Dark Knight.
The Darkest of Nights. It's a film about
the darkest
midnight.
Of nights. About nighttime. Because it's darkest before the dawn, though.
See?
Before the dawn. Guys? It's darkest.
It all works.
It works together. But particularly, I put how it changed the game for superhero movies and movies in general, because I think that was what we wanted to specify.
It so did.
It's the best. It's the best. So it's would you consider it one of your favorites? I put for both of us. I consider it my favorite.
I mean, not even there's no doubt. Like there's no doubt when I walked out of The Dark Knight, and you know I have to be fair because Heath Ledger's performance as the Joker was it obviously added to that film. Like no one else could have come near that performance and no one else could have done what he did for that film. But it definitely made it the best of the franchise of the series because of him. And that's, you have to say it, right? Because he was so good.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But yeah, The Dark Knight, man. I mean, before this film, you know, I'm just looking at a timeline here and we'll talk about this in a second because it's actually like spot on.
Yeah, I mean, like I've said it before, like this is the movie that made me want to make movies. So I do literally think of my movie life as before and after Dark Knight. Like,
yeah.
Like it is the calendar for me in that way.
Yeah.
But since we're already getting into it, let's go to the first kind of suggested talking point I had, which is kind of like our relationship to The Dark Knight. Like what was your viewing experience like in terms of seeing it in theaters and whatnot, and what places it held in your life since it came out?
So I remember watching it with two of my good friends, they're brothers, and one of them is like super like stubborn. And we had just seen No Country for Old Men. Okay. I think it came out the same year, and I think it came out right
before
it came out before The Dark Knight did.
Yeah, I think that was like an early summer, maybe.
Yeah,
this was something July. Like this was late July.
Was that, or it was like right the year before, or something in that range?
Yeah, 2008.
There you go. So, what's the guy's name? Javier Bardem is that the guy? That's the villain, the protagonist. Mm-hmm. He did such a phenomenal job in that.
Anton Chigurh. That's a good one to bring up because that's the next, like, that's a villain to compare to the Joker. Yeah,
and people did that, you know, and I think they even went up for the Oscars maybe together. I don't know. The point is, the guy was amazing, and my friend fell in love with that performance. And the first thing he said when we came out of this film was like, well, he was better. Like Javier Bardem was better than Heath Ledger, and that he's going to be overrated because he died. And, you know, fine, make the argument.
I have that negative impact of Dark Knight toward the end of our notes here because that's, I don't like that argument.
I mean, that's the thing. It's an argument that people can make. I don't agree with it in any way because just seeing how good it was and the tiniest of details that this man put into this actor, into this character. Like, okay, the whole lip licking thing. What's your take on the whole, you know how he constantly is like licking his lips?
It's the best. It's like,
I have a theory for why he did it. And I won't be convinced otherwise. Yeah. Do you have an idea?
Okay. Of the lip licking thing? Maybe I don't want to preempt you. Tell me your theory first.
Imagine this happened to you, this traumatic thing where someone cut your mouth open or you did it yourself or whatever his story is because he keeps changing it.
Yeah.
Imagine that happens to you. Okay. Anatomically speaking, like just as a human being that you got your mouth is cut open now. You're going to constantly be like, stuff's going to constantly be coming out of your mouth though, right? Like you drink water, it's going to leak out a little bit. You drool. So he has this like perpetual habit of licking his lips. I have a close family member who lost a ton of weight and he does this thing where he's always like tugging on his shirt, which is like a total fat guy move. Okay. And as a fat guy, I can say that. But he's in really good shape. He's skinny. He's in good shape, but he still does that thing. And that's like
there's still that little tick. Yeah,
he put this tick that is so deeply rooted in this character that I don't see any other reason why he did that besides that. And this the little stuff like that, man. Like, God,
I mean, because the theory or something I've heard, and I only heard it recently when I was like, that same, I told you I listened to a podcast. That's in line with what you're saying, is that the like, you know, I got these scars, yeah, yeah, like the scars are just as prominent inside the mouth as they are outside. Yeah. So that's why, like, so he can feel that in his cheek, basically.
It's
so,
whatever it is. It's more than just,
at some point. But yeah,
I know what you're thinking right now. You're thinking, Danish, what are you eating? Because I'm talking with my mouth full. I'm eating banana bread.
Oh, you're eating banana bread?
I made
bread?
Some fresh banana bread. I'm eating banana bread now.
So much more luxurious. I put out a plate of Tostitos with the dipping thing without the intention of having anything to dip, because I didn't think we had anything to dip. So I was just going to eat salty Tostitos. But then I found hummus in our fridge. So hey,
there's no yeah, shame.
But it's so crunchy. I don't want to eat it on air, honestly.
Yeah.
But yeah, so you saw it with your friends.
Yeah, so we argued that, and that's whatever. But this film, like... Mm. Everything about it, and you can look at it. There's so many holes to poke in it. Fine,
yeah.
But you know,
somebody described it as the Star Wars of our generation, wherein like we can find no fault in it. Like at least my age of group, and I agree with that. Like I can tell you the flaws in it, but it's still a perfect movie. Oh, to
absolutely.
Me. It's still a 10 out of 10, 100%.
It's like so.
And there's small dumb things, but because you know what it is, the eternal law of filmmaking or anything creative is if it works, it works.
Absolutely.
Plot hole, whatever. Things,
but who cares?
It works. While watching it. Yeah. If it works, it works.
Yeah. And like, this is Nolan taking, for the first time ever, in my opinion, a superhero movie seriously.
Yeah.
And doing it in a way that like, yes, it's a super entertaining action film, but it's also a film.
Yeah.
Like it's beautiful. Like it takes he tries to make everything look really pretty and really dark and serious and nice and like visually pleasing. The acting is great. They casted the hell out of this thing. I mean, all around. It just changed the game. Like everything before it. I mean, just take every Batman film before it. What is it? It's garbage. Yeah. Like I'm including Batman Begins in this. Like it's great.
Batman Begins is still a comic book. Yeah. But even like Batman 89 and stuff, like they, like if you rewatch Batman 89, like I like that movie, but like if you rewatch it, like, and you see the Joker in that movie, like that was kind of a thing where like, yeah, that has such a cultural huge impact, because like it was kind of like, that was a reaction to like the 60s Batman, which was like real campy and real comic booky. Like Batman 89 was like dark and it had like the Joker and stuff. But even if you watch it now, I feel like it hasn't aged as well as people feel. And people who love it, the reason that I love The Dark Knight. Like I'm never going to find that much fault.
Is this the nipple Batman?
No. This is the first of that series though. The Tim Burton, the first Batman with like Michael Keaton, I think was in the first one. Yeah, Michael Keaton's Batman. Nice. He did that one, then Batman Returns, and then it went to Schumacher for like Batman Forever and Batman and Robin, which was like, that's when it became all theatrical and real campy.
Yeah.
And then Batman Begins, it's like funny. Right? Like that's why Batman Begins was like such a big deal, because it was like, oh my God, we're taking away from the Clooney one and the campiness of like Arnold Schwarzenegger, the Mr. Freeze and stuff.
And like, I was like, oh, this can actually be a film.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then have you seen Heat?
Yes.
The movie Heat? I have not, and I need to. It's a real gap in my thing. But somebody has told me that like Christopher Nolan for this film like had the whole crew sit down and watch Heat, because he's making Michael Mann's Heat in the Batman universe. Like that's the big take I think that made these things different, is that he said, no, we're not just making a comic book movie or whatever. We're utilizing these characters in this universe to tell a different story, which was like, and I remember this was the first time I had awareness. Like I know people before me have better, like they understood movies earlier than me, but this was actually one of the first movies I understood fully too. And even in terms of just like the idea of police corruption, the idea that he was like, like the scene where the mayor is like, if they get anything on you, all the criminals will be back on the street. And I was like, oh my God, like I never understood the nuance of the idea that this hero is needed because the city is just so corrupt. The cops are on the take and every like it's crazy.
There's so much going on in it.
But that's how it is. It's like, it's not focusing on like, even it's not even focusing that much on the Joker or the things, but it also takes me a lot of time to talk about this city and just like, what kind of place necessitates a Batman? Like in real life, what kind of place would need this thing? And it's like, a city that's so corrupt that like, you can't get a judge to like do anything about criminals because they're all on the take. Like, so you need a vigilante. Like,
it's a state of that condition in that area, and that was what it took. Yeah, I mean, man, this feel, I mean, you know, like I know this isn't, this is going to focus some more on the Dark Knight, but you know, this series as a whole, you know, Dark Knight was definitely, if you look at, okay, here's what I wanted to bring up earlier, right? Dark Knight and Batman Begins as well, but Dark Knight more specifically, because it was like the biggest film of the three, in my opinion, I think, in production value as well, production costs as well. But Iron Man, what year did it come out? 2008.
Same year.
That was, see, then, like, this is when, so because Begins came out earlier, 2006,
oh,
I think.
Oh, well, five, I think, yeah.
Yeah, five. So that's when, you know, people, we started seeing, like, this shift in superheroes and superhero films, and they it became a thing where it became cool again, and because no one touched
them,
right?
Dying.
Yeah, because no one touched this stuff.
Yeah, no, people thought they were dying, because it was like Spider-Man 3, I think, was like the last of the, and that like,
was,
obviously.
Yeah, that was so trash.
Yeah, like, that was a disappointment to that. Really, yeah, that was a disappointment film. To that. So people were like, oh, it's going to die. I think Fantastic Four was around that time before Batman.
And it was also the same ones getting made over and over again. Like Batman kept getting remade, Spider-Man kept getting remade, Superman kept getting remade. It was like the big guys. But then somebody took ownership of it.
And like, I mean, Iron Man is a weird choice too for that time frame as well.
Yeah,
I had no idea who Iron Man was, but now it's so weird to think,
but
like
they made him so cool and like
he's so essential to that.
He's
stuff.
Like the coolest character of all of them.
Yeah,
you know, for me, personal favorite, I gotta say Superman, big Superman guy. Mm-hmm. But you know, and if I have to go to Marvel and choose one, you know, I'm a huge fan of the Hulk.
Yeah, I think I'm a Captain America guy.
Nice. Oh, that suits you.
Yeah, like, I liked it. It's so like, because I like the first movie. Like, I feel like that makes me a true fan of it. I like the first Captain America.
Yeah, I did too. Agree. It was a little, it had some campiness to it.
Because I really like the old timey, like, I love that stuff. It's like noble and real. That's why I like, you know, that kind of like American values, whatever, like bravery and all that stuff, the sacrifice. And it's cool for me.
It really is cool. I mean, that's the thing. They've done such a good job with these that you know, they've just become these really fun, you know, films that are real films, and they've created this huge space for them.
Yeah.
You know, Marvel, DC, Star Wars has made a comeback. Like, you got to say, like, Nolan's a part of that.
Yeah, and I feel like Nolan is also part of a trend where, like, artistic directors getting franchise properties. Mm. Like, I'm so excited for Rian Johnson's take on the next Star Wars, and then he's doing a trilogy after that. Because, like, I love, like, Looper and seen the other ones, Brothers Bloom and Brick, or his other first two, where, like, he's not ubiquitous in terms of, like, he doesn't do a movie every year writes a movie, has a vision, does it well. Unique, and it's cool, and I'm like, I'm so excited for his visions of these kinds of things. And I think that Nolan was one of the first people that they gave a check to be like, you know, you did Memento, you did these like real crazy mind thrillers and stuff, and like I think Insomnia was next, which is kind of like a novel stuff that he still did something cool with. But then they're like, here's a character that like has been out of favor, you do your artsy thing to him and do what you want with him. So like that's when we get, like, to mention Captain America, like the second Captain America movie, what's it called, Winter Soldier. Like, that's such a great movie because, one, they make it the huge choice, spoilers for Winter Soldier, but, like, they make the huge choice to break the biggest organization in that universe, which is the S.H.I.E.L.D.
Yeah.
But, like, it's like a political thriller. Like, they changed the genre of it so it's not a comic book movie anymore. It's just a political thriller using these comic book characters.
Yeah.
You know, it's this crazy, like, yeah. So the idea of doing a different movie but with comic book characters, doing a genre that's different than that but utilizing just the comic book characters and staying true to their characters,
I think that was
a big trend, especially with The Dark Knight, that like this is a like crime drama like thing, but it's not just like men in tights fighting each other.
Yeah,
it's not just mindless.
Yeah
it's absolutely a real like movie that's asking big questions, asking real things, and taking him and doing it well.
I'm really excited for Black Panther for the same reason. I feel like it's going to be such a good film.
And the Ryan Coogler, dude, I haven't seen Creed from him, but his first one, I believe, was Fruitvale Station, which I saw, which is like one with Michael B. Jordan. It was about a shooting of a black kid on like the subway. Like, we were talking about police brutality and that kind of stuff, but like humanizing, basically there's a kid who got shot, I think, in the subway by police somewhere in California. And it's basically like his day before that, his day ended that way, basically, and just showing him and his life and stuff. Like, Wow. Just African American experience one, but then like to have like Black Panther be that, it's gonna be awesome.
It's gonna be, yeah, this has really, like, we could start seeing now like an age of like superhero films break into Oscars, and not just like we talked about, like the fun of like the CGI and stuff.
And Dark Knight was a big deal regarding that, because Dark Knight was the movie that made them open up the Oscars to 10 for Best Picture instead of 5 nominees to 10 nominees.
Wow.
Because after that year where they only had 5 nominees and Dark Knight didn't get elected, because everybody's like, superhero movies don't get elected for that kind of stuff, or nominated.
Yeah.
Then the culture was like, it like broke everybody, because they were all like, we want to start seeing Oscar like movies in the Oscars that we actually watch. And they were like, okay, 10 nominees now, like Toy Story 3 is all the movies that you like are now.
Yeah.
Because of this movie specifically, like, it's crazy.
Nice, and then and well deserved. I mean, right?
Yeah,
I mean, they're real films.
Because it's like, when is Christopher Nolan going to get an Oscar? Like, he makes comic book movies. He makes Inception. I think he got it for cinematography. But like, it's funny that like one of the most influential, like, I do think he's like the inheritor of Spielberg in terms of like people knowing his name.
Yeah.
Like. And yet, like, no Oscar love in terms of being a director or his films that often. Like, I don't think how many of them have been nominated, but it's crazy.
That was something special that he did with that. I know we're like, it's not all about the Joker and Heath Ledger, but there's one more really cool thing. There's this. Do you know who Tom Waits is?
Yes, I think you showed me this at your house. Actually, tell me about it. Tell me about it.
So Tom Waits, right? Like this, like, iconic American musician who's like known for lyrics, known for also how he sounds. He's very like very raspy and like he talks like this and he did this interview like I don't know how long ago
in Australia.
The rumor, also Australian. Yeah, exactly. The rumor is that Heath Ledger was watching this, and he came and he heard this interview, and he thought Tom Waits was the perfect sound for the Joker, and he came to Nolan and he told him, and he did the voice for him, and either they had to reshoot some scenes or they had to restructure how they were going to do it because they were like, this is exactly how this is going to go.
Wow.
This is the voice of the Joker. That's it.
Wow.
And so like even things like that, like his choices of how he talks, he puts so much into that.
Like, I mean, like, so much into that. If you've heard his voice, like the biggest thing I knew Ledger for was A Knight's Tale. I like that movie a lot. If you've ever seen that, that's like a movie of him. It's such a weird movie. Have you heard of it before? A Knight's Tale?
No. Wait, yeah. It is the one where he's like a jouster, right?
He's like a jouster, I had to watch that in like British literature class.
Nice.
Because like Chaucer is a character. Geoffrey Chaucer is like one of the characters in it. But it's such a weird, like, anachronistic, like, whole movie where they do like modern music while they're talking about jousting just like normally.
It's so cool. It was really fun. My dad loves that film. I thought it was hilarious.
It's a funny movie. It's good. But like, even in that one, he's just killing. He's just a kid in that movie, but like, you don't recognize him in Dark Knight. Like,
No.
At all.
What's Iron Man's butler's name?
Jarvis.
Jarvis. Jarvis is in that film. He's the announcer. He's like.
Paul Bettany.
Paul Bettany. Yeah.
He's
a great actor.
Yeah.
Too.
He's good too. Yeah. He's popped up a lot. Like, I've only seen. Like, yeah. He's been. Vision made me think of like see his career, and he's been around. Yeah.
Did you see the Vision in the new trailer? He's like.
I saw the whole new trailer is a whole thing we could talk about too of Avengers Infinity War. I did a breakdown on my Facebook profile.
I saw that. I was trying to read it, but I didn't finish it.
It's crazy because it's like and I never watched the trailers, but then this one I saw everybody posting. I was like, I'll watch it, and then I was like, dang, this is such a good trailer. But that one, like, and I mentioned things in that trailer that, like, we could say it's kind of inheriting from Dark Knight to an extent of just like the idea that you treat characters, you treat characters with respect enough to like develop them and then to have us connect to them really strongly. And I think that Nolan kind of started that trend of just like treating characters with respect. But I think Marvel definitely like. Elevated in their own way, the way we connect to these characters in terms of making the whole shared universe and giving each character a movie, at least the bigger ones that they have.
Yeah.
And just like connecting us to the relationships between people. Cause it's like, maybe that's something just to mention, like in that breakdown thing I did on Facebook was like the idea that in the beginning of the trailer, they actually show us like Vision and Scarlet Witch who are in a relationship and, what's her name? Scarlett Johansson. Black Widow and Hulk.
Yeah,
we've seen have a relationship too, and you just juxtapose shots of them so that they're literally romantic relationships, and part of that makes me think of the idea of just like how love is an important thing to just humanize people. And and like I never knew Rachel actually is an invented character for the Dark Knights. Like I thought she was comic book character or something, but literally invented a character so that you could have a love interest, so you could have somebody from his past to keep him grounded and kind of like see where he's coming from and this kind of stuff. And that choice is huge.
And that's another thing where I think Nolan led the like paved the way for like, you know, now you hear Marvel Cinematic Universe, right? Marvel Comic Universe. Like
the MCU.
The thing is like they've created this where they've made it okay for the fans, like the diehard nerds of the comics are like, you know what? This is a cinematic choice. We get it. Like it just had to be done because not everybody watching these films knows like knows the ins and outs of Batman like everybody else does. Like, I mean, we don't comic book nerds, and I say that very lovingly, they know the ins and outs of these characters. They know all the villains. They pretty much know what's going to happen in these films because just based on the villain that is chosen. Like my friend, when he heard the title Winter Soldier, for Civil War, he was like, wow. All it took was a title. He didn't even see the trailer. He's like, wow.
Yeah, because that's a whole event in comics. Yeah.
Yeah.
It was their yearly event of like, okay, this year we're gonna put all these people to fight. Yeah.
Yeah. And he was like, wow, I could give you a huge spoiler that they might do, which you know would be really amazing. Cause like apparently in the comic book thing,
it's a little different.
They kill Captain America.
Oh, do they? I don't know if they can really kill them.
Like something like, I think they kill him, but he doesn't actually die or something like that. I don't know. But you know, I thought they were going to do that. I thought, cause at the end, Iron Man did have him, when they were fighting and he went over to take out the Winter Soldier.
Yeah.
If that last fight could have been a fight to the death,
yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. Like, and Iron Man definitely had the upper hand when he analyzed Captain America's fighting.
So cool, man.
That was awesome. That was so dorky. That was so cool.
But
that's the thing. Like he Nolan created in The Dark Knight this sort of you know, it's okay to do these things in cinematic universe because you just need those elements in a cinema, and that's just how it works.
And I feel like let's put this back to the overall thing we're doing with film is like empathy machines. We're trying to get in the head of somebody else or get to circumstances of somebody else, and so to do that, treating comic book characters that were on paper, like making the Joker, which was just like, and it's so funny to me that these are just like Stan Lee talks about how they were just like writing up, making up stories so they could pay rent in their New York apartments because like, and write some funny papers. And now they're like, people have created these into empires of media. Like, it's crazy to me that that whole process of taking like, you know, paper with color and these characters of somebody thinking like, oh, what if there was a guy who was a bat? Like Bill Finger's is like, he has a cowl and he puts a bat, like he has things like these ridiculous ideas, like the Joker, he's a clown, like bats and clowns, of course, the ultimate enemies, like as if that's a real, like, but deciding to say, I'm going to take that crazy notion and I'm going to humanize it enough for people to actually empathize and watch this. Like, that is the act of cinema. That is the act of storytelling. It is, taking crazy things and figure out how could we take this seriously? How could we empathize with these characters or find a way in so that literally we as human beings, and this is a reference Community a lot in the show because Community is such a touchstone for me, the TV show Community. And in the like first pilot of Community, the main character, Jeff, makes this speech where he says that like, what's the difference between humans and sharks? And he says the idea is humans watch Shark Week and sharks don't watch Shark Week. And they do that for the same reason that like I can hold up a pencil, tell you this pencil's name is Steve, and then I break the pencil in half and a little of you dies inside, because you can connect to anything. That's what humanity is, and that's why we give billions of dollars to The Dark Knight and all these movies and stuff. And that's why I feel like connecting it to Muslim Film Club's bigger vision and goal is the idea, like, when we see, I'll do it with this an analogy and this anecdote, the idea of like how comic book nerds kind of feel validated by seeing those little nuances within these movies that take them seriously. I had met the actor Farhan Tahir. who's a he's like Pakistani actor. He's acted in a lot of stuff. He's acted in Iron Man. He was like in the Ten Rings or whatever in the first Iron Man. Bald guy. He was in Star Trek. He was in the first few scenes of Star Trek. He was like the captain.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, he's a big actor, Michelle. So I got to meet him at like one of these like convention things for Muslim. Nice. I think it was AMCC, American Muslim Consumer Council or something like that. Okay. And he mentioned, I think, either there or in another speech I saw him with, where he was in ER, and he was a Muslim character. And in it, they asked him, like, okay, your character is about to die or something of the sort. And he said, what will your character do in this moment? He said he would make dua. Wow. And so in that, he put his hands up and made dua properly. And he said he got so many calls and so many outpouring of Muslims who were like, it healed my heart to see you actually make dua properly on screen in ER. Nice. Like the idea of the respect for my lifestyle or something, like when we see Muslims on screen and we see them saying Allahu Akbar, we say them like praying to God, praying to the wrong things or doing salat. It irks us in like in a way that's like, yeah, it's nice that we're included in this way, but like the nuance of detail shows a level of respect for our humanity. And that's why we want Muslims in the industry, because that matters. Like being a kid and seeing yourself represented in a way that like we literally pray 5 times a day. It's crazy to me to think of like if a non-Muslim followed me around all day. Like we do this thing where we put our heads on the ground every day. And to some, that's a as ridiculous a notion as like Joker makeup, like Joker putting on makeup. But to see that validated through the use of a medium like film would be amazing if we could see more representations of ourselves taking our way of life seriously, you know?
No, that's a really good point. I mean, it just gives us that much more to love the film about, right? When and it's not because it's becoming about us, right? Like it's like you said, it's a representation that we like that we're connecting with, you know? In anything in life, if you can connect to it, you're gonna appreciate it more. You're gonna want to be a part of it. You're gonna want to see it. You're gonna want to interact with it in however way is appropriate. You know, and that's where seeing stuff like that in film is really cool.
Yeah.
So from now on, I'm gonna need you to call me Batman.
Okay, you could call me I haven't done an impression yet. I'm afraid to do an impression. What are some lines that he does? His first line
Which character are we talking about? The Joker?
Joker, dude. Yeah.
Yeah.
What's his first line? He's like, no. I killed the bus driver.
Nice. That's pretty good.
What else? I'm looking at his scenes. I think I'm in the scene with the interrogation. Where it is like the way you threw yourself after her. This is so fun. Nice. As I'm looking at his face right now, it's crazy.
That's so good.
But he's like, he's amazing. Down. Huh?
Yeah, dude. You have his laugh down.
That's just my laugh. Was I laughing like
him? You kind of did laugh like
him. Oh, man. I have a Joker laugh, apparently. Okay.
There's another nuance thing that I, again, thought of. So this is like, we're on what, like number 3 now?
This is what?
Another nuance that he would do. For the character.
Yeah, no, do it.
Okay.
Yeah.
So there's, it's the scene where he walks in and he's like, he's doing that really sarcastic laugh where he's like, aha, 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 aha. He's got the little bomb on his vest.
His real introduction scene.
Yeah.
That was like the dopest. I think that was in the trailer, the first trailer.
It was the dopest thing ever. Yeah, it was so dope. So what's that black guy's name? Like his character? Because he's like a pretty big character. Gamble, yeah. Gamble. He's a pretty big character. So he was like, he calls him a freak. And you could see Heath Ledger get upset about
this. This is the only moment in the movie where you see him vulnerable.
Yeah. Actually, I feel like it happens one more time, but I don't remember. I think you might be right. But definitely see that. You definitely see him like.
Because he says the line is, I think he says like when he says I'll do it for half, and they're like, you're crazy. Like, no, I'm not.
That line.
I don't want to be called crazy or thought of as crazy. The Joker showing
him, like, clearly he's been called that before and he doesn't like that. And
he's like, no, I'm not crazy. Everybody else is crazy. I'm an anarchist. Yeah. And I'm trying to show you guys why everything sucks. Like,
yeah. And then he bounces back. Like
he goes into character again.
He's like, okay, fine. I'm okay now. I have a job to do here.
That shows one nuance it might be my favorite thing in movies. And that's why I think Christopher Nolan is one of my favorite filmmakers is when characters act.
Yeah.
When the character himself, that's why I love, like, Burn Notice was a show I like, because I like spy stuff. When a character has to, because it everybody acts in real life and we don't admit it, but like we act in our, yeah. in our things. So when I see a character having to literally act, it's so like fun to see.
Yeah, no, it's dope.
But yeah, like you said, like, and I'm trying to think of when else in the movie he might have that like moment of vulnerability.
I think there's one more. Maybe we're watching it now, so maybe you'll see it.
Maybe the nurse scene. Well, that like, you know, cause, and that's a whole thing too. The explosion.
I want to say it happens in the scene where he takes Rachel at the party, and he's like,
yeah,
but maybe just but watch it. You already passed that, but just
I see, have it here. Well, I'm just scrumming through it, but I feel like you're right where it's you want to know how I got these scars, basically. Because in that scene, he's not.
She says something to him. She hits him back with something. I think, I don't know. It's been a while.
Yeah, no. She I think she hits him, and that's when he's like, a little fight in you. Nice. I like that. But then you're gonna love me. That's another one reason I liked this movie when I was a kid too. When I was like 14 was when he's holding Rachel at the thing. And he was like, let her go. And I remember in my mind thinking, like, that's such a dumb thing I've seen on, like, TNT movies all the time of, like, somebody saying a dumb thing like that where, like, he's holding her over a window and saying, let her go. Like, that's, and then he's going to let her go. But then Joker literally says, like, poor choice of words. And I was like, you called it out. That's so cool. You're doing what all these hacky movies didn't do, which is call out that, like, you use the trope, but you called it out.
That's
like,
dope. Yeah, that's a good.
In terms of my film cinema language, I think of like those action movies I used to watch on like cable or whatever. And it would always be that dumb things like that, like dumb puns that led into things. I'm just like, just don't use those words. Say, you know, lift her up or something, like say something else.
Yeah.
It's like, no, very poor choice of words. Like, it's so cool.
Yeah. No, yeah, it is. It is really like, you're exactly right. You nailed it on the head. Like that's the anti-Batman movie.
And that's the kind of stuff that like when people criticize the flaws of the movie, I feel like so many, like a lot of them are things like that where it's like, that's kind of the point to an extent. Like,
yeah.
They did something weird, but that's kind of the point of that. Like,
yeah. And if not that, like that's the subtlety is making up for four other things.
Yeah, exactly. Like it, like there's so much other stuff going on that it's like, you have like, I find that because this movie is so examined, like you're three rings down into great movie territory that you're like nitpicking at some point where you're like, oh, the hand-to-hand combat or the action in certain parts wasn't as good as it could have been. I'm just like, what are you judging based off? Just judge the movie for what it is.
Yeah.
It's like the action is the action in this movie. That's all you need to do. Did it make sense to you? Did like, cause I think somebody made a video essay breaking down the truck scene where they're in the under like the subway area.
Yeah.
Where like he like runs out the trucks, Joker like runs out the trucks for the SWAT vehicles. And somebody broke it down from like a very like film school 101 perspective to be like, oh, look, you break the 180 degree rule here and you don't know where this truck came from. And then like another filmmaker came out and was like, yeah, he did all those things. And yet shut up, because that's not how cinema works. Cinema works with he put all the elements together to where you didn't notice any of those like 101 errors, whatever you want to call them. Like, it's not about a technical test of you know, checking boxes that we followed all the rules here. It's a matter of how did you feel in the moment while watching it.
Yeah, were you excited or not?
Yeah.
Yeah, and then the answer is yes, you were.
Yeah, you were engaged in what was happening. It's not.
Yeah.
And that's the goal of all of it. So.
We could go on and on, but we should not.
We talked about a little bit of legacy of Dark Knight and superhero movies, what made this so different, negative impact of Dark Knight. I feel like people made dark things after this. They learned the lesson of like, just make everything darker. Like,
oh, you're right, actually. Yeah, because I remember when we had Superman come out, Man of Steel.
Oh, Man of Steel, man, was Zack Snyder's darkness.
Yeah, it was. And it wasn't like Nolan darkness, right? I mean, it just didn't have that same sort of flair.
I mean, visually, he did interesting things. That's what Zack Snyder does. I'm eating now.
Yeah, nice.
You should. But what's it called? Visually, like he's a visual filmmaker, but I feel like Chris Nolan is more of a. This is storytelling in terms of narrative and that kind of. Right, he's a script writer as well as screenwriter.
Yeah, no, exactly.
That kind of stuff too.
Yeah, man, great film all around. It changed the game.
And I feel like we've
no debating.
And that. I didn't like. That's what I'm loving about this podcast is that I get to express things I didn't know I wanted to express. But like the whole idea of like the reason I think we talked about in the first episode that this is the movie that made me want to make movies, because my whole thing was about communicating and about like, what's the best way to communicate? What's the best way to humanize, like, Muslim and Islams in this way, or to, like, talk about Islam? And this movie was, like, it showed me that, like, wow, cinema is a medium that can do things like this. Huh. And that, and it led me to that realization to be, like, my greatest contribution to, like, Muslim image in America and just, like, Muslim dawah and that kind of stuff might be by utilizing this medium to its fullest, because this is a movie that utilizes the medium to the fullest.
Yeah. No, it's, it does. Yeah. Yeah, it's the best.
Dark Knight.
So what have you been watching lately?
What have I been watching lately? I'm watching The Dark Knight.
Yeah, apparently.
I've seen this a lot of times. And I have the... Oh, I should pull up the... I think I, we did that first episode. Pull up... to conclude, we had I have my quotes on my wall from my, like, movies.
Yes.
Let me, I forgot yes, to do yes, that. Yes. I have like five of them are from Dark Knight.
Let's go through all five, because this is... I think we have a little bit of time left here.
Either Dark Knight or Batman Begins, I think, too. Just like defining lines, because these like lines are a big deal for me too in terms of just being a writer. Just like dialogue that's like hits you, it's crazy. Let's see. The Joker. Oh, this is toward the end. Let me see if I can do it kind of chronologically. Unless I have Dent tosses. Well, I can read. I'm reading it literally from the script. This is a script of Dark Knight that I literally like took out. I like cut up pieces of it, but it's like I'll read the action of as well rather than just the dialogue.
Okay.
So it says. For Harvey Dent, it says, Dent tosses the coin again. This time, it doesn't land, in caps. Dent looks up. Batman is there. So this is when Dent is questioning that
guy. Oh, yeah.
And it says, Batman, you leave a man's life to chance. And do a Batman. You leave a man's life to chance. Dent, not exactly. I just love it because it's
so good.
The thing with Nolan movies is that, like, he telegraphs them so much. There's so much foreshadowing. Like, even... This is we should have spoiled for Dark Knight from the beginning, but you notice even too when Dent meets Michael Caine, and he says, "You've known Rachel her whole life, right?" And Dent and Michael Caine, Alfred says, "Not yet, sir," as a joke, nice. And then she dies later on.
Yeah, that was kind of messed up.
like that's a foreshadow. Like Nolan does this in like a lot of his movies. Like even I've listened to one about podcast about The Prestige recently. I've just like how the twist in that movie is so like once you know the twist, you watch it again, it's so obvious because so much of the movie is just about like but the fact that you still get the twist, the fact like this one you either live long enough to see yourself to be
yeah.
or you live to see yourself become a villain. Like Dan says that and he lives out that arc. Like it's so
yeah, it's great.
In the hands of a lesser filmmaker, it would be so hacky and obvious and that kind of stuff, but like he does it in a way where
he does it so well because it's such a good
it's line. Like a magic trick. He shows you the pack in front of your eyes and then he does it
anyway.
Oh man,
yeah, that's great. I like those.
What else? There's another line here. Oh, Batman, you're garbage. You kills for money. Won't talk like one of them. You're not, even if you'd like to.
Nice.
To them, you're just a freak, like me.
They just, like me.
They just need you right now. And then he goes on. I have more of that. Oh, then I have the one from Batman Begins of like, it's not who I am underneath, but what I do that defines me. I've used that as like chutzpah material, dude.
Nice.
It's like, it's so cool.
You should just do that. A chutzpah that all Batman stuff in it.
Like, I could, man. I've loved that. Cause like, that's another thing too. The idea of like being Muslim, I feel like when we grow up with such a lecture culture, like I look for like lessons and gems from a lot of movies, which is also part of the, I feel the danger of a lot of movies is that people who are writing them have subconscious ideals, even if they say they're neutral or whatever. Like a lot of the, like Joss Whedon, a few people who are like atheistic filmmakers, whether you like it or not, they're doing atheistic things in their movies, even if it's like a real harmless movie. Like things like the Avengers, like in the Avengers, Loki is saying, bow down to me. This is like, he says that he has a whole scene where they have people bow down. And he's like, this is your nature, servitude and slavery,
which is
like Islam. But it's the villain saying it in the movie to say that, no, we're not. So it's like you had to like picking up on that kind of stuff.
But you still had to point it out in order for you to put it down, which is a really interesting, like that's the, cool. It's funny, like one of the interesting arguments I've seen against atheism is that in order for you to not believe in something, you have to actually believe that it was there first.
Yeah.
It's a really interesting thing, but I don't have enough behind me to talk about that. So I can't,
we're not a theological podcast.
No, that's the other thing too. I watched Justice League finally.
Oh, did you?
Yeah.
You want to talk about that? Because it's about Batman and stuff.
Yeah, it's kind of Batman-y. I mean, I guess it is very Batman-y.
What's your take?
Okay, so I was thoroughly entertained.
Okay.
I kept waiting for it to get bad, but it didn't.
Yeah.
You know, I didn't necessarily. Okay, this is like spoiler alert because it's fresh, but
spoiler.
I didn't like how they did Superman's comeback. They did kind of cover it, like at one point, because I think Victor Ash says something along the lines of like, we don't know what state he's in, or maybe even Batman said it, like, yeah, we don't know what state he's in. So this is just going to sort
of. The logic of it is a little murky. Like, they're literally in murky water. Yeah. That's some gross.
Yeah. 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 Like, I thought this, the obvious and easy thing was going to be that he was going to like get blasted into the sun or something and that would recharge him and he'd be good to go.
I thought that would happen in the first movie, honestly. I don't know why why they even had a funeral. Cause everybody was just like, oh, okay. Next movie is going to be, isn't the,
but they even showed the dirt moving on the grave, like, which I feel like, yeah, in this that was film, a,
yeah,
sort of,
why would they even, yeah,
you know, why they do that? But anyway, that's no, fine.
Actually,
but dude,
they did that in that movie.
Yeah. In the end, that implies that he's
alive again.
Exactly.
He's
already alive.
Yeah, but then in this movie they had to do stuff to make him. Oh wow.
Yeah. Okay.
Whatever.
Cyborg was amazing.
I enjoyed him. I did. I like. His story is pretty dope. Like, they didn't give him much time. It's so good.
Yeah.
His arc, and it's so like, it's emotional from the beginning in terms of just like,
yeah,
the Frankenstein complex and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah. I gotta say, Aquaman was really forced. Like, they used a big name guy who's, yeah, like super popular right now.
Yeah,
I feel like he didn't hit his lines. Like, I think he felt like he took the role too easy. He was like, oh, I'll be a natural at this, and
in terms of the background too, the idea that Joss Whedon took on the film a little bit later on, and they did like a month of reshoots or something.
Okay.
So there is a tonal battle in the movie where there's like some real quippy, funny stuff.
Yeah.
Mixed in with kind of the structure of the movie, which was a little bit darker from Zack Snyder, I'm guessing. Like,
and
they had like reactions to the like response to Batman v Superman and Man of Steel, where they're like, oh, we're gonna make it funny, that's why we have like jokes now and stuff. Yeah. So there was some tonal weirdness where it's like it was hard to see one vision
movie. Yeah, I agree with that.
I feel like Aquaman was one of the things that suffered in that, where they like didn't really
know what to do with him.
I mean, my favorite scene is the like complete spoilers for Justice League, but like the one where he's sitting on the Lasso of Truth.
Yeah, that was like, good.
That was good.
But like, I feel like they didn't give us enough to, they didn't let us enjoy that scene enough. Like,
yeah,
they should have pulled like the camera back scene and let us see him sit on the rope.
But I like the reveal of it though, honestly.
Like, I do like, look, they should have had, I like how they had Batman be like, hey, you're sitting on the thing. I feel like they should have pulled back when they had him pull
it. Oh, and
like,
have us in on it, but him not in on it, but yeah, the characters in on it.
Because
yeah,
at the same time,
we did see the characters laugh at it and stuff.
Yeah, exactly.
But like, we didn't know why they were part
of that. Yeah. I wish they would have done that.
That's a whole like filmmakery thing too, of like,
yeah,
I think Alfred Hitchcock talks about that, like what the audience knows, what the character knows, and what the movie knows, kind of. And
nice.
Managing those three things is really filmmaking.
Like, I feel like that was missed.
Mystery.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's small things like that, but it's definitely,
and that's
like,
fine. And that's fine.
It's just missed opportunity more than anything else.
That's all it is. It's not a big deal.
It was a fun scene though.
Yeah. I like how now in every film there's like an evil cube that has something.
Oh my God. Cubes upon cubes upon cubes. What's in the cube?
What's in the cube? What's in the cube? But yeah. Yeah, it's fun, man. I enjoyed it. I'm up in the air whether I like that or Thor better. It's, you can't really compare them, but you know, they're the two that are out right now.
Yeah. I enjoyed Justice League, but it was definitely like I think I said it when we first recorded too, when I first saw it too, it was like, it's a thoroughly unoffensive movie.
Yeah.
Which is a compliment and a not compliment. Like,
yeah.
You know, it is what it is. I had fun. The same thing with like Batman v Superman. Like, I had fun watching Batman v Superman in the theater, I feel like, while knowing throughout it that like, well, for most parts of it, but while knowing throughout it that like the moment I think about this movie, it's going to unravel.
Yeah, exactly.
But it's a funny, like there's some fun stuff in that movie in terms of just visuals and stuff. Yeah, like is. The Batman, like
yeah.
Batman's tech and stuff is new. It was completely new. Like it's our first new Batman. And
no, that was cool. Stuff, and then he's very non-Nolan-y in his Batman choice.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, there's value to different perspectives on like, and that's what's cool about these characters as well, is the idea that they can be reincarnated and re-visioned after so many years, it's like so many different takes that can be brought to them.
Yeah.
And like, and you can put your own spin on them. That's like, so that, again, that's the same thing I was saying about like, that's the essence of filmmaking, is taking the same, and many people argue that there's only 36 stories that exist, or there's only three stories that exist, where it's like underdog, there's that, like, yeah. And we're just retelling the same story over and over again, because there's a universality to storytelling in general.
Yeah.
But then we can get specific about what we think about things and all that kind of stuff.
Sure.
With these interpretations. What have I been watching lately? I'll mention that Casablanca documentary that I mentioned in the last episode.
Nice.
I watched this like short documentary on Casablanca. It was like half an hour long because it's like the 75th anniversary, and they had like Steven Spielberg interviewing about it. They had like other directors and stuff just talking about why they loved the movie.
Nice.
And kind of how it came together. And actually, you know, that's a good thing to bring up as we finish up this episode. The idea that Casablanca was one, like, it was at a time where movie studios were like factories. They were like car factories. So it was like one of 114 movies they made that year.
Good
and
Lord.
Then somehow the combination, like, and they wrote the script of it, and they didn't have the final scene until they shot the final scene in terms of writing. They were rewriting it throughout the movie's production.
Damn.
So it was really a lightning in the bottle, like, and then like America joined World War II at Casablanca, Morocco, the weeks before Casablanca came out, so that city's title became important in pop culture to where people watched the movie. Like, it's so, making it stand out to American classic is just like the factor of so many like other things of like coming
That's
together.
Crazy.
And I think about that with The Dark Knight too. The idea that like in my mind, like Heath Ledger's death made this his last, like basically his last performance. I think he had one movie after this, but like
yeah.
The fact that I can see him as the Joker and now I can't see, like, and somebody mentioned this thing, like if he was alive today, he might be still talking about the Joker and set stories on talk shows and stuff to promote his new movie or whatever it was, like,
yeah,
but the fact
sure.
that this is his like signature final thing and we're getting no more Joker of this kind leaves this weird lasting legacy. And there's so many things that have, like I mentioned the hospital scene, where he blows up the hospitals, they really blow up hospitals. There was one that was set for demolition and they asked them to like,
oh, that's right.
Building. And then it literally happened where he pressed the button and it didn't go off because the literal explosions didn't go off. And Heath Ledger kept playing it in the scene until it literally went off. And then he was in character so that they could use it, cause they had one take for this thing. They're blowing up a building.
That's
and he
amazing.
Kept it and go. And it's like the choice of an actor in that moment to do that. Like, that's the kind of stuff that's just like, wow, this thing it's a movie of legend in terms of just like how all these elements came together at this time, you know, and with like all these actors at the top of their game and stuff. Like, it's not something that can be reproduced because it's just like, it's lightning in a bottle. That's how the classic movies are sometimes made, where it's just like, we chase to make good movies like you and I,
yeah.
but we also know like Allah does what he does in terms of lasting legacy of stuff, in terms of timing being an important thing, where people are at, where, you know, what level of quality we can produce at the times we are, like,
yeah,
things come together when they come together for, you know, and that's how it happens.
Yeah, man.
Have you been making anything lately? Is Laura a tough question of all things?
No.
No.
I have a documentary that I have to finish editing, so that's something that I'm going to be.
Is it that same? Over. I think you talked about it before. Is it the same? Is
the one in Malaysia?
Malaysia. Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. This is a new one. A new one in a sense. I'm taking over the edit. It's something that we're kind of working on. We've been working on for like a couple of months. Yeah, maybe we can talk about it more when it's finished.
Nice. Inshallah. Yeah. I'm still doing some wedding films for freelance and stuff.
Nice.
It's not huge things we're making necessarily, but it's good to mention that we're making stuff because, yeah.
Filmmaking is filmmaking.
These discussions are not in a vacuum. Like, our love of The Dark Knight is it pounds in my head when I'm editing wedding videos. Like, it's all connected in that way. It's funny.
Yeah.
Should we end on a quote? I don't think I said all the quotes. Let me see if I find another quote.
Yeah, give me one more.
End of the movie, basically. The Joker giggles as he falls, enjoying the ride. Something slams into his leg, and he jerks to stop Batman's grapple. The Joker hollers in pain as Batman hauls him up. You just couldn't let me go, could you? I guess this is what happens when an unstoppable force meets an immovable object. You truly are incorruptible, aren't you?
Nice.
Oh man, I feel like it's bad because I have my headphones on, so I can't hear my own voice, so I don't know how good or bad it is.
No, it's good. That's really cool. It's a good quote.
But you truly are incorruptible, aren't you? And then we find out he kind of is, honestly. later podcast. Yeah, really
this at least this version of Batman, the one in the one in the
new, the one is already corrupted.
He just does what he wants. He just kills everything. He's crazy.
But all right, sounds good. Thank you so much for joining me here. Until next time, see you guys in Muslim Film Club. We gotta come up with a better
outro.
Salams. Peace out.